The following is a presentation of Remnant. Finish the work you have started in me as I'm on my way to you.
Hi, this is Jerry Gotts, and welcome to Remnant Church Online. We hope that you'll find today's message challenging, full of hope, and most of all, practical. If you have questions, comments, or need a little more help on any of the issues that are raised by today's message, drop me a line at jerry@remnantchurchonline.com. Thanks a lot. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jerry Gotze.
When you think of a big, you know, Samson, you think of a guy that looks like this guy. No. All the ladies said, amen. Okay. One of the great things about Conan is, in this movie, he doesn't talk a lot. And so that's actually probably one of his best times. Now, here's the thing, though. If Samson looked like this, do you really have to figure out why he's able to do the things he can do? He's knocking down walls. He's beating people up and killing them with the jawbone of a donkey. He's doing all kinds of heroic stuff. And you look at him and you say, oh, yeah, that guy could do that. I mean, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's the governor, though. Okay? He could do that. But what if Samson looked a little more like this? Now, I'm telling you, if this guy killed 1,000 people with the jawbone of a donkey, you'd say, how on earth did he do that? What is going on? Is he on steroids? Well, he's obviously not on steroids, because if he is, they're not working. We think of Samson as a big buff guy, and I don't think he really was. Now, I may have gone too far with this one. I Google searched last night. Skinny guy with long hair. No, didn't work. So I guess if you're like really skinny, scrawny, or wimpy guy with long hair. If you're a really wimpy guy, you just don't bother growing the hair out because there's no sense at that point anyway. The thing about Samson is that he's a lot like us. Or we're a lot like him. See, we've talked about a lot of Old Testament heroes in our series so far. And when you listen to their exploits, you listen to things they do, and you may be tempted with the takeaway to walk and say, I don't know that I could do that. Samson is flawed. He's just like us. We carry a lot of Samson's genes around with us. Not necessarily the big muscly ones, but certainly the weaknesses. So we're going to spend some time kind of working our way through the story of Samson. We do not have time this morning to go into his whole life. I encourage you to read Judges chapter 13 through 16. Some amazing stuff there that Samson did. And some of the stuff, we're just going to hit the high points today. But first of all, let's talk about Samson's fatal flaw. He has a fatal flaw. Judges 13, verse 1. Again, the Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight, so the Lord handed them over to the Philistines, who oppressed them for 40 years. Now, the Philistines were not a nice group of people. Very warlike people. They oppressed Israel forever. There was always this battle going on between the Israelites and the Philistines. They just didn't like each other. And it went a long way back. There's something interesting here, though. For 40 years, they oppressed them. You know what you don't hear? This is one of the few times you don't hear Israel crawling out to God and asking for God to deliver them. Because the Philistines did something very, very smart. They didn't come in as a conquering army. They just slowly assimilated their lives into the lives of the Israelites. They just came in as friends. Then they started marrying each other. And before you know it, they were watered down. In fact, before you know it, they were so close to being Philistines that they didn't realize that they weren't really God's people anymore. I see that happening a lot today in us. We're so comfortable with the world. We're so comfortable with the things that go on around us. And we forget that there's supposed to be a difference. We're so comfortable trying to fit in that we forget that part of being a Christian is standing out. Now, when you talk about Christians standing out, we always think the bad thing. You know, little guy in a white shirt and a little black tie and
Would you like to know Jesus?
Look, man, I wasn't that way before I came to know Christ. I hope I'm not that way now. But I do hope and pray that when people see my life, they see something different. When they see me, they think, you know what? I don't know what it is about God, but he's got something that I need. And it's not me, it's God. The whole idea of my life should be for God to show through me. And you can't do that blending in with the crowd. So for this reason, God had to break through. He had to send something that was going to be out of the ordinary. So he goes to a man and a wife, and he says, hey, in Judges 13:5, says, you will become pregnant, give birth to a son. Sound familiar? Isn't that kind of the way, in a different way, but isn't that kind of the way God broke through in the, when he brought Jesus down too? He said, hey, you're going to become pregnant, give birth to a son. His hair must never be cut, for he will be dedicated to God as a Nazarite from birth. He'll begin to rescue Israel from the Philistines. Very important verbiage there. Not that he will rescue Israel. He will begin to rescue Israel. See, the problem is, and we're going to see about Samson, is that he didn't rescue anybody. In fact, he couldn't rescue himself. But he started the process. The woman ran and told her husband, a man of God appeared to me. He looked like one of God's angels, terrifying to see. I didn't ask where he was from, and he didn't tell me his name, but he told me, you'll become pregnant, give birth to a son. You must not drink any wine or other alcoholic drink, nor eat any forbidden food, for your son will be dedicated to God as a Nazarite from the moment of his birth until the day of his death. Now, the Nazarite vow is kind of interesting because the Nazarite vow had three basic tenets to it. Numbers, if you want to look them up, you can find them in Numbers chapter 6. But these are the big ones. Avoid any contact with grapes or the drinking of wine, which I think is interesting. Maybe the wine part you get, but, can't have grapes. Nope, no grapes. Eat a banana. Okay. Never touch a dead body of any kind. Now, that's a good rule for most people. Let your hair grow and never get it cut. I just turned 55 years old. I would probably be dragging a belong behind me or carrying in a backpack or something. What hasn't fallen out, yeah. It's a lot easier up here. Judges 13, when her son was born, verse 24, her son was born, she named him Samson, and the Lord blessed him as he grew up, and the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him, and he lived in this place. I'm not even going to try. Which is located between the towns of Zorah and Eshtaol. He was set apart by God, and he was stirred by the Spirit of God. Samson had everything he needed to accomplish his task. And guys, if God's going to ask you to do something, he's going to give you everything you need to accomplish your task. Do not think that God's going to just, toss you in the lake to teach you how to swim. That's how my dad taught me. He tossed me in the lake to teach me how to swim. And your brother said, no, he wouldn't try to teach you how to swim. Just tired of your stuff. Compared to some of the biblical heroes we've talked about, he had more. He had more at his disposal. He had more God-given gifts right there. But he let it slip away because he began sliding into sin. Sliding into sin. I think it's interesting, and that's our next point. I think it's interesting that we slide into sin. Very few people wake up. I did some teaching for the Law Enforcement Academy at Central High School this week, and I was talking to him about drugs, and I said, in all my years of ministry and the times I've been in law enforcement, I've never met a heroin addict who didn't start by smoking pot at a party. Never. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody smokes pot at a party is going to become a heroin addict. Never. Never seen an alcoholic who one day said, you know what? I think today I'll put on dirty clothes and maybe wet on myself and go sleep in the park. No, that's where they end up. That's not where they start. Most of us begin sliding into sin. We don't just jump in head first. We make a bunch of little tiny adjustments along the way. We make a bunch of tiny little compromises along the way that slide us into sin. Let's look at Judges chapter 14, verse 1. One day when Samson was in Timnah, one of the Philistine women caught his eye. Now, believe it or not, this tells us a lot. First of all, Timna was in Philistine territory, about 4 miles down a ridge from Samson's village. But it also tells us about Samson. In his first public act, he's going over where he shouldn't be. He went to the wrong place. Went to the wrong place. You ever find yourself in the wrong place? Anything good ever happen after that? Probably not. So one day when Samson was in Timnah, one of the Philistine women caught his eye. When he returned home, he told his father and mother, "A young Philistine woman in Timnah caught my eye. I want to marry her. Get her for me." All right. Greedy. His father and mother objected. "Isn't there even one woman in our tribe or among all the Israelites you could marry? Why must you go to the pagan Philistines to find a wife?" But Samson told his father, "Get her for me. She looks good to me. She be looking mighty fine, Dad. Go get her." Notice what's going on here. Not only has he gone someplace he's not supposed to be, now he's like looking around and saying, "Hey, you know what? There might be some stuff here for me. There might be some things I like here." The phrase in verse 3 literally means she's right in my eyes. And that's all he cared about. See, because he was looking for the wrong thing. You ever go looking for the wrong thing, get in trouble? These are all the mistakes that he made that kind of slid him into sin. The downward spiral continues. But it takes a threatening turn. So far, Samson has made some mistakes, but they're not fatal. But that's about to change. By blowing off his parents, what did they ask him? They said, "Isn't there even one woman in our village that you like?" You know, when I was a youth pastor, that was the biggest complaint I always heard. The guys in the youth group, guys in the youth group, "Oh, I don't want to date the girls in our youth group. Our girls are all ugly." And he asked the girls, "Why can't, you know," because they use this, by the way, to justify why they're dating somebody that's not a Christian. He asked the girls, "Why aren't you dating one of the guys in the youth group? Why are you dating this jerk?" "Oh, because all the guys in our youth group are stupid. They're just stupid." You know the bottom line? You're looking for the wrong thing. You're looking for the wrong thing. If all you're concerned about is their packaging, "Ooh, they look good to me." If that was the case, would my wife have ever married me? I thank God that for a period of her life, God blinded her. That's the only way you can explain it. It really is. It's the only way you go, "What on earth?" One of the kids in my youth group said it best. "God, see, you better marry her fast because she is too good for you." Thanks, Pete. Remind me to suck you in the eye later. But man, we're led away by our lusts and desires, aren't we? We're led away when we look at the wrong thing. But he rejected godly counsel. They tried to talk him out of it. When I was a youth pastor, I tried to talk my kids out of doing it. Because I'd watched so many lives get ruined by messing around with things they shouldn't mess around with. Exodus chapter 34, verse 16. God tells the Israelites, you'll accept their daughters who sacrifice to other gods as wives for your sons. And they will seduce your sons to commit adultery against me by worshiping other gods. And that's exactly what happened to Israel. Early in the time at Remnant, I did this illustration where I had a kid stand up on a chair. Jeremy Jones, poor Jeremy. And I yanked him down off the chair. It was so simple. He was, 100 nothing pounds. And I put him back on the chair and said, "All right, now pick me up." And he looked at me like with this look in his face, a lot like you are looking at me now. See, and that was the whole point of it, was that it's always easier to pull somebody down than it is to lift somebody up. Ladies, if you're dating a guy who's not a Christian, stop. Stop. Because their values, goals, and motivations are different than yours. And if you, and it's, "Oh, well, I'm just dating, I'm not going to marry him." You moron, you marry who you date. You just walk down, okay, I'll take you. No, you know, there's this whole courtship time. And let me tell you something, ladies, guys, if you date somebody who's not a Christian, you will slide down. Guarantee it. Oh, no, I'm going to lead them to the Lord, Jerry. Great, lead them to the Lord, then date them. Or as my cousin Julie said, check their fruits. You got to check their fruits. You got to see if they really have the fruits of the Spirit before you date them. Ooh, some very, very angry looks at me right now. See, because the third mistake he made was he rejected godly counsel. Let me tell you something. You can walk out of here and say, you know, God's, he's stupid. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You know what? I'll pit my 32, 33 years of ministry experience and all the lives I've seen wrecked against your couple of years of dating experience any day of the week. And if you reject that godly counsel, it's to your destruction, not benefit. You can justify it any way you want to. You can tap dance all around it. But you know it's wrong. And nobody can lie to you like you can lie to you. Ooh, let's go on. Judges 14:7. When Samson arrived in Timnah, he talked with the woman and he was very pleased with her. He hasn't even talked to her yet. Hey, Dad, go get her. She's good. He doesn't even know what she... She could be annoying. He doesn't care. Because he's hormone driven, not Holy Spirit driven. And if you're dating, you better know the difference. Wow. Okay, now I'm going to appeal to us that are of the more mature time right now. Remember the Doors song? Hello, I love you, won't you tell me your name? They wrote it for Samson, maybe. I don't know. Anyway. He saw her and he liked her. And he went to, he said, go get her, my wife. And then he talked to her. He says, oh yeah, she's okay. See, he continued a wrong relationship. There's nothing good about this relationship. There's no basis for this relationship. It was all physical from the jump. Then he said, ah, she's all right. Judges 14, 5 and 6. Samson and his parents were going down to Timnah. A young lion suddenly attacked Samson near the vineyards of Timnah. What are in vineyards? Grapes. And lions, evidently. At that moment, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him, and he ripped the lion's jaws apart with his bare hands. He did it as easily if it were a young goat. But he didn't tell his father or mother about it. Later, when he returned to Timnah for the wedding, he turned off the path to look at the carcass of the lion, and he found that a swarm of bees had made some honey in the carcass. He scooped some of the honey into his hands and ate it along the way. What did he do? He touched a dead body. He touched grapes. He also gave some to his father and mother, and they ate it. But he didn't tell them he had taken the honey from the carcass of the lion, because that's gross. Hey, I found a rotting lion. It's got a honey in it. Let's check it out. No. As his father was making final arrangements for the marriage, Samson threw a party at Timnah, as was the custom for elite young men. Now, what you don't understand here, that in the Hebrew, he threw a party was a nice way of saying he threw a kegger. He's having a blast. It literally means an alcoholic, a drunken party. Is Samson supposed to be drinking wine? He's touching the body. He's drinking wine. He's compromised his commitment. Hasn't he? Do you see how the subtle progression goes in our lives? We follow these steps. We're drawn away by our desires. And then we try and justify it. And then now we've compromised our commitment. Now we're telling ourselves that it's okay just this once. And then we tell ourselves, yeah, but it's okay this time. Because look, nothing bad happened last time, so it must be okay now. And it must be okay now. And it must be okay now. And hey, that's okay. That's never been wrong. It's easy for us to do. And you've got to watch where you're walking. I love this part. Judges 14, 12 through 18. Samson said to them, let me tell you a riddle. Now, he's at the wedding party, and this is kind of what they did. Let me tell you a riddle. If you solve my riddle during these 7 days of the celebration, it's a 7-day party. I think our wedding reception lasted an hour. Maybe two. And that was probably an hour and a half too long. Let me tell you a riddle. If you solve my riddle during these 7 days of the celebration, I'll give you 30 fine linen robes and 30 sets of festive clothing. But if you can't solve it, then you must give me 30 fine linen robes and 30 sets of festive clothing. All right, they agreed. Let's hear your riddle. So he said, out of the one who eats came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. This is, in Hebrew, it's a lot prettier, I guess. But this is Hebrew poetry. This is kind of what they were famous for. 3 days later, they're still trying to figure it out. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, entice your husband to explain the riddle for us or we'll burn your father's house down with you in it. Dude, you invite us to this party just to make us poor? So not only are they too stupid to figure out the riddle, they're mean. Why did you invite these people to your wedding? Because I remember when we were making our wedding list, I purposely made sure that we didn't invite anybody to the wedding that was going to want to burn down my mom's house. And if you're planning a wedding, I think that's just a good idea. You know, do what you want. So Samson's wife came to him in tears and said, you don't love me. You hate me. Can't you hear it? You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer. He said, I haven't even given the answer to my father and mother. Why should I tell you? Oh, Samson's off to a good start, isn't he? This whole marriage thing is going to work out well for Samson. As soon as I said that, every man in the room went, ooh, no, Samson, no. Except the single guy said, what's the problem? I don't get it. That's because you're single and you may be ever. Okay. Bachelor of the Rapture. Okay. So she cried whenever she was with him and kept it up for the rest of the celebration. At last, on the seventh day, he told her the answer because she was tormenting him with her nagging. By the way, bookmark this because we're coming back. Then she explained the riddle to the young men. So before the sunset of the seventh day, the men of the town came to Samson with their answer. What's sweeter than honey? What's stronger than a lion? Samson replied, if you hadn't plowed with my heifer, you wouldn't have solved my riddle. Now, he's done two things. He just called his wife a cow. Again, not necessarily a good thing. But he's figured out that something's amiss. Only one person knew the answer, so something happened. She was able to entice Samson because he was all hormones and no brain. In fact, this became a part of his life. This became a reoccurring theme in his life. Here's the problem. If we have weaknesses and we refuse to deal with them, they come up over and over and over and over. If you got something that you know is a weakness, and you just say, it'll be fine, then you're going to face that weakness the rest of your life. See, he ignored his weaknesses. So, it's not a big deal. Judges 14, 19. Then the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. He went down to the town of Ashkelon, killing 30 men, took their belongings and gave their clothing to the men who had solved his riddle. But Samson was furious about what had happened, and he went back home to live with his father and mother. So his wife was given in marriage to the man who had been Samson's best man at the wedding. It's like an episode of Jerry Springer. Samson realizes, hey, they figured out the riddle. I got to find 30 Versace suits. So rather than go buy them, he went and killed people and took theirs. Now, I don't know about you. Well, I do know because this is kind of what I do for a living. But I know that in order to undress people that are dead, you got to touch their dead body. If you're new here today, by the way, I run the crime scene unit for the sheriff's office. So that's the only reason I'm undressing dead people. You're going to walk out, man, that guy's a freak. I forget that not everybody understands where I'm coming from. In my mind, it's perfectly, oh, yeah, yeah. Samson is angry because he's been publicly humiliated. And he takes off. See, he would rather take revenge than repent. He would rather go to these people and kill people and take their clothing than to go to these other people and say, you know what, I was wrong to do this. I shouldn't even be here. Understand, why is he marrying this girl? Oh, she looked good. What is she? Is she an Israelite? She's a Philistine. And so you see how that one decision, that one being in the wrong place, looking for the wrong thing, slowly, slowly slid him into sin. It's a cautionary tale. So what does Samson do? He takes the road to revenge. Judges 15, verse 1. Later on during the wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat as a present to his wife. Most guys take a diamond, take, you know, here's a goat, honey. I don't think Samson's really good at this. I really don't think that. Honey, do you want a goat? Okay, she said no. He said, I'm going into my wife's room to sleep with her. But the father wouldn't let him in. I truly thought you must hate her, father explained. So I gave her in marriage to your best man. But look, great dad here. Her younger sister is even more beautiful than she is. Marry her instead. And the sister's like, what? I'm like a consolation prize? That's good for her self-esteem. Samson said, look what we said now. This time I cannot be blamed for everything I'm going to do to you Philistines. Then he went out and caught 300 foxes. This is pretty ingenious. He tied their tails together in pairs, and he fastened a torch to each pair of tails. Then he lit the torches and let the foxes run through the grain fields of the Philistines. He burned all the grain to the ground. He burnt, including the sheaves and the uncut grain. He also destroyed their vineyards and olive groves. The Philistines have three cash crops: wheat, olives, I lost my place, and grapes. He just wiped out their economy. Needless to say, Philistines, not happy. Not happy. We threatened to burn down your house, but you actually did burn down our stuff. So the Philistines get mad, and they go to the bride and say, what's the deal here? They go to the father. What's the deal here? Why did he do this? And he said, well, because, you know, I gave his wife to another man, and, you know, we had all these problems. So they burned the house with her in it and killed him. Is Samson happy?
No.
Verse 7, because you did this, Samson vowed, I won't rest until I take my revenge on you. So we made a bad mistake. We started in the wrong place. And then it got worse, and it got worse. And then we took revenge. And then it got worse again. And now we've got nations that are going to be at war here. See, we always think we can hold on to it. We always think we can control sin. We always think that we can control the bad things going on in our lives. And what we don't realize is there is no control of sin outside of Christ. You can't do it on your own, or you had already done it. Each time it gets more serious, and each time it gets bloodier. Judges 15:8, so he attacked the Philistines with great fury and killed many of them. Then he went to live in a cave at the Rock of Edom. He goes and hides in a cave. The Philistines go and attack Judah, and Judah says, wait a second, why are you attacking us? And the Philistines say, well, because of what Samson did. They say, well, I'll tell you what, we'll go get Samson. So they go to Samson, they broker this deal, and they tell Samson, dude, I think they took like 3,000 men, which is probably a good idea. There's a 3,000 men, 1,000 men, I don't remember which. 300 men? It was a lot of guys. They say, look, we're taking you in. You can come quietly. No. Sorry. We're creeping in again. Sam says, okay, I'll go, but you can't kill me. Tell them, you're not going to kill me. He says, all right, we won't kill you. So he went. Again, Samson, not that bright. If you're in a cave and you know you, are you really going to go with these guys? What's the promise? You're not going to kill me, but you're going to let them kill me? Samson, dude, not smart. They turn him over to the Philistines and it goes bad again. They've got him all bound up. It takes him up. He gets there and he says, you know what? I've had enough of this stuff. So in verse 15, he found the jawbone of a recently killed donkey. He picked it up and killed 1,000 Philistines with it. It just gets bloodier. It just gets more horrendous. Because he was thirsty and out of Gatorade. Verse 18, Samson was now very thirsty. He cried out to the Lord, you have accomplished this great victory by the strength of your servant. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of these pagans? This right here is the greatest prayer Samson's ever prayed. That tells you something. That tells you something about the state of his life. Is that the greatest prayer he's ever come up with is one of self-pity. One of asking God for him, for God to do something even after Samson has already been ugly. So God does. God springs up water. See, the problem is that Samson has still had problems. But after this, Samson rules Judah, and he rules Israel great for 20 years. Two decades. Guess he got it all out of his system. No more problem with Philistine women. No more jawbone killing. No more stuff. 20 years. Then, though, Samson goes to destruction. Judges chapter 16. One day, Samson went to the Philistine town of Gaza, spent the night with a prostitute. Wow. 20 years, and he falls one night. Sound familiar? If God gives you victory over a sin, guard that victory. Don't think, well, you know, 20 years. It all started again, didn't it? Wrong place, looking for the wrong thing. Word soon spread that Samson was there. Now, he's in Gaza. The Philistines, not real crazy about Samson. Even this 20 years, people hold grudges. Especially Old Testament times, man, they hold grudges. If you kill me, my son will kill you. And if you kill my son's son will kill you. And eventually, his dog will come after you. I mean, it's just like generational. It goes on forever. Word soon spread that Samson was there, so the men of Gaza gathered together and waited all night at the town gates. They kept quiet during the night, saying to themselves, when the light of morning comes, we'll kill him. Samson stayed in bed only until midnight. He got up, took hold of the doors of the town gate, including the two posts, lifted them up, bar and all, put them on his shoulders, and carried them all the way to the top of the hill across from Hebron. Now, you're thinking, oh, gate. No, no. These are iron and stone. In fact, one of the commentaries I read said they thought it weighed about 800 pounds. Picked it up, carried it over to another town. Not only was he telling them, hey, you guys can't stop me, he embarrassed them because now he said, basically he tore their town gate out. He said, you know what, and you're not safe anymore either. So what's he doing? He's just poking at him. He's just going at him and saying, you know what, bring it on, baby. I'm not scared of you. I'm not worried about you. The problem is that he made the mistakes again. See, look at the first mistake. In verse 4, we read that Samson fell in love with a woman named Delilah. This third woman he got in trouble with. He got involved with another wrong relationship. The Philistine rulers who know all about Samson's fatal flaw come up with a plan. They go to Samson. Verse 5. Let me go back to it. Well, actually, did I skip a part? No, I didn't. He goes to Delilah, and he's spending time with Delilah. And everything's going fine, but Delilah's a prostitute. She's doing it for money. There's no real love for Samson. The Philistines know all about his weaknesses. They know about the fact that he likes prostitutes. They know about the fact that he likes to mess around. And they know the fact that he's not really very smart, as evidenced by some of the mistakes he's made. So they go to Delilah and tell her, you know what? If you'll, we'll give you 1,000 pieces of silver if you'll betray him. See, he toyed with temptation. If you read this portion of Judges, she whines and complains to Samson. Tell me the truth. How come you can't? Why don't you tell me what it's like? Why are you so strong? And Samson's just like, oh, shut up. So first he tells her they bound him with fresh bowstrings, he would be helpless. So that night, while he's sleeping, she binds him with fresh bowstrings. And she tells him, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. They come in to get him. He breaks the bowstrings. He kills some guys. And he escapes. So she asks him again, come on, Samson, the bowstrings weren't right. All right, if you tie me up with new ropes, I'll be weak like a kitten. So while he's sleeping, he gets tied up with new ropes. Samson, not bright enough to see the pattern going on here. Not really quick on the draw here, Samson. Samson, the Philistines are upon you, breaks the ropes, kills him. Finally, he tells her that if the 7 locks of his hair were woven into a web, he'd be helpless. He goes to sleep. He wakes up. His hair is woven into a blanket. Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He starts killing people. Now, you think after the 3rd time, Samson say, you know, Delilah, I don't think you're on the up and up. But not Samson. He's hormone driven and his brain has checked out. Samson is feeling so self-confident and so cocky. He thinks he's invincible. So eventually, he does what he shouldn't do. Judges 16, verse 15, the Delilah pouted, how can you tell me I love you when you don't share your secrets with me? You've made fun of me 3 times now, and you still haven't told me what makes you so strong. The counter argument by Samson is, yes, and every time I tell you, you do something to me, and then people come in and try and take me captive. But not Samson. She tormented him with her nagging all day, or day after day, until he was sick to death of it. Does that sound familiar? Samson not only picks women for the wrong reason, he picks women who whine and complain. I'm just going to leave it there. Okay. Because I have to go home eventually and I don't want to die. See, everybody says, oh, Samson was tricked. He wasn't tricked. He was stupid. And by stupid, I mean he made a choice. Stupid's a choice. I deal with people every day that are stupid. They knew something was going to cause them a problem, and they did it anyway. They're stupid. That's the choice they made. Dumb you're stuck with, stupid's a choice. He revealed his secret to save face. Then Delilah lulled Samson asleep with his head in her lap. She called in a man to shave off the 7 locks of his hair. In this way, she began to bring him down, and his strength left him. Then she cried out, Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you. And this is one of the saddest scriptures in all the Bible, I think. When he woke up, he thought, I will do as before and shake myself free. But he didn't realize the Lord had left him. That's chilling. How many of us do exactly what Samson did? We walk down that same path over and over and over, and we find ourselves in a place of weakness. We find ourselves utterly vulnerable. And when everything just goes wrong, we say, oh, I'll pray to God and everything will be okay. And we don't realize that we're so far from God. He's there, but we don't know how to get to him anymore. We're so lost. We're so far away from God. that we have to struggle to find our way back. He didn't realize the Spirit of God left him. What happens next is ugly. He didn't realize what he'd done until it was too late. Verse 21, so the Philistines captured him and gouged out his eyes. They took him to Gaza, where he was bound with bronze chains and forced to grind grain in the prison. Four things happened to Samson. There was mutilation. They gouged out his eyes. See, his wondering eyes had caused all the trouble. Then there was deportation. They took him down to Gaza. That had to hurt because that's where he first visited the prostitute. Then there was incarceration, bound with bronze shackles. And finally, there was humiliation. They set him to grinding in the prison, which was the work of slaves and animals. Understand, folks, if you mess with sin, if you don't recognize and treat your fatal flaws, you will go through blinding, binding, and grinding. It's going to happen. You get blinded by your sin. Blinding takes place as we lose our moral compass and our vision. Binding is a result that we lose our freedom and liberty. We'll spend the rest of our lives grinding out a purposeless existence. Sin always, always, always has a price. And you will pay it. Except there's a Savior who's already paid that price. If you will go to Christ, He will take that away. Now, you may still have to pay some bumps and bruises. But it's better than paying the whole thing yourself. So let me give you some action steps. Psalm 38:18. But I confess my sins. I am deeply sorry for what I have done. Number one, acknowledge your fatal flaws. The only person that says that they don't have flaws is somebody who hasn't examined their life. I got plenty. Psalm 34:17, the Lord hears his people and they call to him for help. He rescues them from all their troubles. Admit you need help. We come to church and we act like, yeah, everything's fine. How you doing? Oh, I'm blessed. Praise God, I'm blessed. Hallelujah. On the drive here, our lives are coming apart. We're crying over the steering wheel. We get here, we put on this nice, shiny, stupid-looking face and act like everything's okay. And it's a lie, and it keeps us from getting the help and the peace we need. Genesis 4:7, you'll be accepted if you do what's right, but if you refuse to do what is right, then watch out. Sin is crouching at the door, eager to control you, but you must subdue it and be its master. So you got to avoid temptation. If you know you've got a problem with drinking, here's a hint. Don't drink. Maybe you shouldn't be in a bar on Friday night. I don't know, I'm just saying. If you got a problem with lust, maybe you shouldn't be buying Playboy on the way home. I'm just saying. If you got a problem with gossiping, maybe you just shouldn't talk. Actually, I think that's probably a good idea for a lot of us. Judges 16:28, Samson prayed to the Lord, Sovereign Lord, remember me again, O God. Please strengthen me just one more time. With one blow, let me pay back the Philistines for the loss of my eyes. Ask for help. That's exactly what Samson did. Psalm 119:11, I've hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. You've got to assimilate God's truth into your life. Make it part of the fabric of your daily life. You can't just read it every now and then. You got to just submerge yourself in it. How far can a person go till God won't deal with them anymore? How deep a pit do you have to bury before God just gives up on you? I don't know. I'm not sure that pit exists. And I don't care who you are today. I don't care what you came in with. I really don't. Oh, but Jerry, if you knew my sin, you would think differently. No. Because I know mine. And I know what God's done to me. And I know what God continues to do in me. Because I know it'll come as a shock, but I'm not perfect. I know some of you are really, no, Jerry, no. It's true. Corrie Ten Boom survived the Nazi prison camps, and she was asked how she could keep on going when things were so tough. Look what she said. There is no pit so deep that the love of God is not deeper still. Wow. No matter how far you run away from God, you can never go so far that God can't find you. Samson found this out. Verse 29 and 30 of chapter 16, Samson put his hands on the two center pillars that held up the temple. Push against them with both hands, he prayed, let me die with the Philistines. The temple crashed down, the Philistine rulers and all the people. So he killed more people when he died than he had during his entire lifetime. The series is called Heroes. And Samson is not a hero. He's not. Sorry, he's not. You know who the true hero of this story is? It's God. God's the hero. See, because God took a man who was beaten and blinded, a man who was sinful and broken and ruined and not very bright and full of all kinds of bad things, had done all kinds of bad things, and still blessed him. If you're here this morning, I don't care how deep a hole you've dug yourself. And make no mistake about it, you've dug it. You can blame it on other people. You can blame it on your husband. You can blame it on your wife. You can blame it on your kids. You can blame it on society. You can blame, shut up. I don't have time to hear you whine and complain. You dug the hole, you're the one stuck in it. The book of James says we sin when we're led away by our lusts and desires. I'm not led away by yours. I'm led away by mine. And you're led away by yours. The people we try to blame it on are just convenient. They're a convenient way for us not to deal with our issues. So God comes to you this morning and he says, hey, I see you in a hole. Let me pull you out. I know you're hurting. Let me help you. I know you're wounded. Let me heal you. I know your life is not the way you wanted it to turn out. Let me fix it. And you got a choice this morning. You can be stubborn. You can be Samson. You can make excuses. You can walk out of here and walk out those back doors back there exactly as stupid as you were when you came in. Or you can stand here and say, you know what, God? I'm done. I got nowhere else to go. And that's exactly where God wants you. He wants that moment when you quit trying to save yourself and let him save you. Are you going to have to clean up some stuff? Probably. That's okay. God's able to help us do that too. Understand, the only thing that will keep you in that pit is your stubbornness and your stupidity. I don't sugarcoat stuff. I don't have time. I don't have time to make things nice for you. I'm just going to tell you the way it is. Is that fair?
You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com.